broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
Rush Limbaugh has the right to say whatever he wants.
As Christians, we should be more concerned about putting Christ in people's hearts.
Before that, I felt that the middle class tax cuts
were being held. I am frustrated.
I heart Jews.
Chicken crap.
That is a threat on the radio.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch, and that means we simply must go through the looking glass to places, to people, to things that other talk shows simply cannot deal with. Al Sharpton wants to take on Rush Limbaugh. I think you just heard that.
I don't know why I call him that.
Well, that's what he said. Rush Limbaugh, actually, so-called hate speech. President Bush's retrospective job approval rate is higher than Obama's current one. Plus, residents in Tulsa are fighting over a holiday parade. PhilHendryShow.com, PhilHendryShow.com for all of your joy and fun and all of that jazz. And it will be joyful and fun because later this week, if all goes according to plan, I say this week, I'm sure, we're going to be opening up our merchandise store. Very first thing for sale will be our best of, our original best of CDs. The ones that we do have, and there is a limited supply in time for Christmas. If you want a classic Best of Phil Hendry 97, 98, 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, or 2005, we've got them. And when they get in store, we'll announce on the air exactly the names of them and the different cuts. You know, we've got...
Yeah, a lot of people want to know, like, where Plane Go Boom is.
Plane Go Boom is on, I believe, I don't know, number one rated, I think.
And another one people want to know about, All You Can Eat Negro.
All You Can Eat Negro is on our first one. That's on our first one called Still on the Air. But nonetheless, we will have those announcements for you. And as we say, in time for Christmas. World famous Phil Hendry Show here this evening, starting off our news hour. We do have Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard with us. Al Sharpton wants the FCC to shut down Limbaugh. I'm kidding. But, you know, if you butcher his name like that, Reverend, what am I supposed to do? Not reference it? Are you out of your mind? Limbaugh? Anyway... He wants Limbaugh's racist talk to be shut down. It's no secret that Reverend Al Sharpton isn't a fan of Rush Limbaugh. Now Sharpton's hoping the Federal Communications Commission will do something about the conservative radio host. Sharpton told MSNBC's Ed Schultz Monday he's conducting a series of meetings with the FCC to see if anything can be done to put a stop to what Schultz calls Limbaugh's racist type talk. Racist type and hate speech. We're going to see the FCC next week. We're not going to stand by and allow publicly regulated radio and television just go for marketing and promoting this kind of racism. Sharpton's upset that Limbaugh has repeatedly called Democratic policies reparations for slavery. How's that racist? Now, I understand that it's racially charged because it is saying the Democratic Party is kowtowing or the Democratic Party is you know, knuckling under to black political interest. But that's not real racism so much as it's just an opinion about the Democrats being racist, you know?
Well, no. What do you mean Democrat being racist?
Well, wouldn't you call it racism if the Democrats were mostly concerned with policies that would affect favorably black people and nobody else?
Well, yeah, but I mean... He's saying that the Limbaugh doesn't like blacks or anything. I think that's pretty well been proved, too.
Yeah, on account of Donovan McNabb.
That Limbaugh doesn't like blacks because of Donovan McNabb? You know that Limbaugh, to be honest with you, wasn't too far off about Donovan McNabb. Donovan McNabb ain't that great of a quarterback.
What are you talking about, man? The guy went to a couple Super Bowls.
Well, he didn't win any, and the fact of the matter is the cat ain't all that great of a quarterback. But I digress. The objective is unemployment. The objective is more food stamp benefits. The objective is more unemployment benefits. The objective is an expanding welfare state, Limbaugh said on May the 11th. The objective is to take the nation's wealth and return it to the nation's rightful owners. Think reparations. Think forced reparations. Now, that's what Limbaugh said on May the 11th. On June 22nd, Limbaugh revisited the subject. Obama's entire economic program is reparations. Schultz called Limbaugh's words, Schultz, Who's Schultz? Oh, Ed Schultz. Schultz called Limbaugh's words racially charged hate speech. Well, racially charged is not racism. Racially charged is racially charged. Hate speech is racism. So once again, Ed, you meathead. And he noted that Republican congressmen have picked up on the theme. Representative Steve King, who's a jackass, and that's, you don't have to talk to me about Steve King. This guy, I mean, if he had a brain, he'd have it out playing with it. Argued last week on the House floor that the claims of African-American farmers and American Indians who were discriminated against in the 1980s and 1990s by the Department of Agriculture are fraudulent. We've got to stand up at some point and say, we're not going to pay slavery reparation in U.S. Congress, I say. No, he didn't talk that way, but he might as well. That's how he thinks. That war's been fought. That was over a century ago. That debt's been paid for in blood, and it was paid for in the blood of a lot of Yankees especially. And I'm Steve King, and there's not a thing I can say that has even a remote connection to intelligent discourse. I just like to take it to its extreme, and they're dancing in the streets for Obama. And I was wrong about that, but I'm still proud to be one dumbass from Iowa. God, is that guy stupid. Rush Limbaugh has the right to say whatever he wants to say, just like me do, too, said Al Sharpton. And me, too, said Steve King. And Sharpton said, mm-hmm. Steve King and Al Sharpton, now there's a team. Oh, my God, that'd be fantastic. I would sponsor that. I would produce that.
What are you talking about?
I'll tell you what I'm talking about. This is one of the greatest ideas I've ever had. Al Sharpton and Steve King together, I see a 20-city tour, medium-sized venues, tickets moderately priced, say $40, and it's just the two of those clowns up there. Actually, I don't need Al Sharpton, just Steve King by himself. And after he goes off, the bearded lady will have a juggling act, and he comes back on for the second half. What do you think?
I like it.
Start setting it up. All right, anyway, conservative blogs have been on the attack against Sharpton ever since he first told Schultz in mid-November that the FCC should take action against stations carrying Limbaugh's show. The bottom line is that the left wants to find an excuse, any excuse, to grab the mic from the man who has wreaked so much havoc on their cause, Mike Finkelstein wrote for Newsbusters. Could very well be. Let's listen now to Al Sharpton, and he had a few very pointed things to say here. The Reverend Al Sharpton telling MSNBC's Ed Schultz that he's going after Limbaugh over racist speech on the radio.
We have a series of meetings going on, and we're going to see the FCC next week. We're not going to stand by and allow publicly regulated radio and television just go for marketing and promoting this kind of racism. Here's a man who calls the president names, plays a record, calling him the good Negro, that has the former majority whip, or soon to be former majority whip, Jim Clyburn, as driving Miss Nancy, trying to play off driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah. Oh. Anyway, here is Sharpton saying Limbaugh has no right to offend the public.
Rush Limbaugh has the right to say whatever he wants to say. He does not have the right to do it, though, on publicly regulated airwaves. The FCC has a responsibility to set standards to say the public cannot be offended based on their race or their gender in this country, and use federally regulated airwaves that they give licenses to that are very competitive, and the FCC is very selective based on standards.
No, the FCC is not selective based on standards. The FCC is selective based on who, you know, sticks enough money in their envelope every week. That's the only thing I would disagree with, Reverend. The FCC does not license based upon standards. The FCC licenses based upon money. You understand? Money. When did we turn into children around here? Now, Reverend Sharpton, I do give you the, you know, first of all, I'm going to tell you this. It'll happen. It'll happen. That's the faith I have in the industry that I have given my life to. The FCC will, at some point, impose these regulations, and radio will lay down and spread for them and won't do a thing to stop them from happening, because the name of the game is money. And if it means that they'll continue to get stations licensed, if it means that they can continue to operate a signal, they'll do anything. They will do anything. I mean anything. You think I'm kidding? They'll sell their firstborn. They'll turn their daughters and their wives over to them if that's what it takes. The radio executives of America today, that is the kind of human being that we're dealing with. They'll turn their wives and daughters over to these guys if it means that they will get a radio station licensed to them. And I've got proof. I have proof. All you have to do, as we've said so many times, look at the stock prices of broadcast concerns across this country. Our companies are being run by functioning imbeciles. $1 a share, $2 a share. This is not fantasy. I'm not making this up. They don't know how to make money. They don't even know what business they're in. All they know how to do is get angry at talent like me, and then run back to Washington like a puppy dog and get their neck scratched and their rear end scratched and, stuff an envelope full of money and stick it into the G-string of some FCC commissioner and get a radio station licensed. And if Reverend Sharpton wants to get something done, I suggest that's what he do. And he probably don't need me to tell him that. You're going back to Washington, Reverend Sharpton, with all due respect, go back with a whole lot of money and you'll get whatever you want. You'll get whatever you want. Such is the corruption of that agency. Now, having said that, and I would invite anyone with the Federal Communications Commission to challenge what I've said. I dare you. First of all, you don't have the guts. What you would do is probably get a guy like me bumped off of radio stations or fired. That's your speed. That's what you guys do. See? You are as crooked as I have ever seen a bunch of people. And if Al Sharpton's talking about regulating speech, meaning attitudes that might be perceived as racist. Now, to the Reverend, it's very clear cut. If you say things like it's reparations to him, that's racism. To me, it doesn't sound like racism. It sounds like a pretty, charged opinion. But the fact is, there's more likelihood that he's going to get what he wants than not. There's more likelihood that the Federal Communications Commission will begin to regulate speech because this industry that I've seen and given my life to for 37 years, there isn't a sewer that it won't crawl in. And if you think it's about Obama, they did the same thing when we had Republicans in charge. There isn't a sewer that they will not crawl through. It's a depressing time for the radio industry. And I talk about it when I go to these seminars. I talk about it. And I say, you'll notice one thing. There's no CEOs in the room here. There's no heads of companies in the room here. There's program directors. You want to know why? CEOs, they don't know anything about radio. They don't want to know anything about radio. They're not going to come to something like this. We're talking about programming philosophy or wasting our time on some other stuff. There's no guys that run companies here. I can't even say this stuff in a radio publication. It gets edited out. You would not believe, I'm telling you, it gets edited out of radio publications that I speak to when I say, look at the status of the individuals that run our industry. It gets cut out. Why? Why? I mean, hey, folks, when it comes to a certain kind of human being, if you want to call it an oligarchy or if you want to call it a sort of a concentration of power, whatever you want to call it, all of the rules that you think exist go out the window. There's no free speech. Where'd you ever get that idea? There's no licensing of radio stations based on standards. And when a guy like Phil Hendry, or anybody for that matter, goes is asked to give a comment to a trade publication about the status of our industry, and if anybody has a right to give an opinion about it, I do, because I've been in this business a long time, and I know a lot about it. As a matter of fact, there isn't anything about this business anybody's got anything to tell me about. Nobody's going to educate me about anything. It's the other way around. And when I give these comments, they never, ever make it into print. Never, ever make it into print. Never. Why? Because that's just too much, man. It's too heavy. It's just too much information. It's far too much to have to grapple with. The fact that the technocrats that run my industry are as incompetent a group as we've ever seen. I'm telling you, not since the guy that ran a Titanic into an iceberg have we seen such a group of people that don't know what to do with a rapidly deteriorating situation like these guys. So Al Sharpton could very well win this fight, regulating speech. Why do I say that? Because the FCC will do whatever it is that is best for the radio stations, and the radio stations are scared to death of Al Sharpton. They'll lose advertisers. Look what happened to Don Imus. They'll run back there. They'll regulate anything. They'll do anything they can to keep as much money as they can flowing into the coffers. So if it means that they go back and they, yes, sir, whatever you say, they'll do it. Believe me, they'll do it. I told you about the article that Lee Abrams wrote in Talkers Magazine, and I mentioned it in our pre-show, and I would recommend again that you read it. Lee Abrams made a statement that I'll never forget. He said, you know, there is art in radio, just like there is in television. Why is it that we're embarrassed about art in radio? Why do we consider it to be hippie stuff? Why do we consider it to be arts and crafts? What is wrong with these people? We're in 1985. He said our industry is stuck in 1985. Last time I checked, that's 25 years ago. All right, we'll be back here, or maybe not. 877-876-PHIL is our phone number, and philhenryshow.com is our website. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
And we have the top 10 singles and albums on iTunes this week, as well as last week, number one. Just on the night. Katy Perry, Firework. Katy Perry and Moe. And he was kissing her belly button. Number two was The Time, Dirty Bit, Black Eyed Peas. Number three, Grenade, Bruno Mars. Number four, Raise Your Glass, Pink. Number five, What's My Name, Rihanna and Drake. Number six, We Are Who We Are, Kesha. Number seven, Dog Days.
Kesha.
What did I say?
You said like Kesha. Kesha.
Kesha, that's what I said.
No, you wanted more like Kesha.
No, I didn't. I said Kesha.
Well, it sounded more like... You said that.
I know what I said, okay? Number seven, Dog Days Are Over, The Glee Cast. Number eight, Christmas Lights, Coldplay. God, I hate them. Is number nine.
That's the name of the song?
No, that's actually that was a statement of personal opinion. No, number nine is Bottoms Up, Trey Songz. Number 10, Hey Soul Sister, The Glee Cast. Top 10 albums, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, Kanye West, who I believe is being sued by somebody. Didn't we just see that? I don't know. Number two, The Beginning, Black Eyed Peas. Number three, Glee, the music, the Christmas album, The Glee Cast. Number four, Glee, the music, volume four, Glee Cast. By the way, I haven't seen anything quite like this since The Monkees, man. So who's making all the bread? Or, well, maybe American Idol.
Well, probably the money. What do you mean?
Who's making the bread on these album sales?
The network, man.
Thank you. Just wanted to see if you guys were paying attention. Number four, Glee. Number five, Burlesque, various artists. Number six, Pink Friday. Number seven, Loud, Rihanna. And number eight, Lungs, Florence and the Machine. But remember, number one is... Just on the night. Anyway. What else we got, man? Bush's job rating higher than Obama's. That's right. George Bush's job approval rating as president has spiked to 47%, according to the Gallup poll released on Monday. Now, this doesn't mean anything. If you think it means something, it doesn't mean anything. Because George Bush's approval rating as a president should only be judged when he is president, not after the fact. And that's what apparently is happening here by Gallup. They're asking, well, what do you think now of George Bush? I don't know of any poll that's ever been quite taken like that. I think it's a little asinine. It might be that the Gallup organization is getting their ass handed to them by Rasmussen and a few others, and so they've decided to come up with something really interesting and creative. Nonetheless, in my experience, the very first time in the history of man on this planet, we've decided to get a president's approval rating when he's not in office any longer. So we have George Bush at 47%. Whatever. That's 1% higher than Barack Obama. I would say that that's a pretty poor showing on the part of President Bush, as much as I like President Bush, and I did. I'd say that, what is this now, going on 3 years after he's president, he can only beat Obama by 1 percentage point, and Obama is up around 46%, which is not bad considering the way this guy is getting his ass handed to him every time I open up a newspaper. All right, we'll look into more of that. We also have the top earning reality stars. How much money are people who don't have to memorize scripts or really do anything other than just show up and, like, be on camera and improv some stuff? How much are they making? I mean, it's a great gig, man. We'll have it for you on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
You know, there's all kinds of polls, and I was losing my mind during a break. And one of the things that you miss if you don't have our video cast up is you miss me losing my mind during the breaks. And I've been losing my, the last 2 days, I've been an ass. Because I'm not going to sit here and read news stories like every other talk show host in America as if it's God's word from the mount. You know, as if down from Mount Sinai comes Moses with the word. Here it is from Politico. Really? I wipe my rear end with you, Politico. 90% of the time, what you guys report, I might as well wipe my ass with what you're doing. Now, here's a new one. This is a new one, and you guys are going to love this. Wait till you hear this. This is a new one for me. Maybe you've heard this before. If you've heard this before, please tell me. Get a load of this. Now, what they're doing now, what Gallup is doing now, and Politico's reporting this as if this is real important stuff. What Gallup, and I'm a, and George Bush is and will remain one of my favorite presidents. And when I say that, people laugh, and I don't give a damn. Ask me if I care. I know why I admire people, and I know why I find fault with people, and I don't need any approval from the peanut gallery, you know. But listen to this. George Bush's job approval rating as president has spiked to 47%, according to a Gallup poll released on Monday. 2 years after the guy's president, they're still asking about his job approval rating. They're asking people, what do you think of him as a president? Are you ready for that? Now, you may think that's normal, but I am here to now inform you that no, it isn't. You may think that that makes sense. I'm here to now inform you that no, it doesn't. It makes no sense. It is, in point of fact, some kind of a device used by Gallup to stay in business. That doesn't mean anything. George Bush's approval rating. In the year 2010, he hasn't been president since 2008. Then they go on to say that's 1 point higher than President Barack Obama's job approval rating in a poll taken the same week. Well, shut my mouth. How about that? President Bush is doing a better job 2 years after the fact than President Obama's doing right now. And why am I even telling you this? Because I desperately want you to know how desperate the news gathering and news disseminating media is these days, folks. This isn't about big media brainwashing you. This is about big media going under. And if they can keep on dancing and doing the fast shuffle of the corporate boogie woogie, brother, they're in bed. They got you, the news consuming American. You guys don't know whether to flip or fall in it. I bet you there's about a good portion of the people listening to me tonight, with all due respect, that are going to go to work tomorrow and are going to say, hey, guess what? Bush is a point higher than Obama in a job approval rating. Well, what the hell does that mean? It means that they took a poll 2 years after the president was out of office. How do you think Bush is doing now compared to Obama? The most reactive, emotional, uninforming poll I could possibly think of is to ask people in the middle of a recession, how do you think Bush is doing? Again, as opposed to Obama. Now, this asininity doesn't just end there, ladies and gentlemen. I wish it did. It continues in a stunning, in a stunning river of mung and garbage as they go on to tell us, get a load of this, John F. Kennedy remains the most popular modern president, with an 85% of those surveyed saying they approved of his job performance. In other words, knuckleheads that weren't even born when Kennedy was president, they give him an 85% job approval rating. How do you like that? Bill Clinton is 69%, Ronald Reagan 74%. 99% of the people that took this survey, they wouldn't know Bill Clinton and Ronald Reagan from the man on the moon. Jimmy Carter, though, he took a big hit. Here we are in 2006, that would be 26 years after he was president. He got a 61% approval rating, but now only 52%. The poll was conducted November the 19th to the 21st with a random sample, a random sample, huh, of 1,037 adults, so to speak. The margin of error is plus or minus 4%. Margin of error? Are you high on something over there at Gallup? What are you guys, seriously? Are you on heroin? Heroin. I mean it. Are you people now fully and forevermore addicted to heroin over there? Is there a drug problem at Gallup that is serious enough to necessitate the intervention of the police and drug counselors and hospitals because of the work that you are now producing at Gallup Poll makes me think that you're all heroin addicts? I kid you, man. When you come up with this kind of mung, you might as well just tell everybody, you know what, we've given up. We're waving the white flag. What we're doing now is we're creating these polls. It's eye candy. It's fun. But it doesn't really mean anything. To say that President Bush, and I love President Bush, he had a very difficult time, and I think he did well as president. And I know people mock me for that, and I could care. But the fact is, President Bush is not 47% to Obama's 46%. That has no relevance. It has no meaning. It has no, there's no substance to that at all. That's just the hallucination, the momentary, fragmentary memories of people that they were asking the questions of, going, oh, you know. And that means nothing. John F. Kennedy, having an 85% job approval rating of people that don't even know, whether he really was president or whether someone's just joking with him, that has no more meaning than if you were to ask, what do you think of Daffy Duck as president of the United States? What do you think his job approval rating would be? I bet you anything, Daffy Duck's job approval rating as president would be perhaps slightly less, but more, slightly less than Kennedy's, but more than Bill Clinton's. And Jimmy Carter taking a big hit, 61%. So the point of this is the following. When they tell you these things, what they're giving you are opinions, uninformed opinions, uninformed. I underline that word, uninformed. I can be very, very confident tell you these are uninformed opinions. These are people, I don't know who they are or what they, but I tell you they're uninformed opinions. So they're giving you uninformed opinions of past presidents, the uninformed opinions of modern Americans in 2010. Understand, the modern American is almost illiterate when it comes to history. This is a sad and tragic reality, but we are. Very sad, very tragic, very... there's no words that describe the state of Americans today when it comes to their knowledge of history. But we're functionally illiterate. Not to mention illiterate when it comes to geography. There's very few things when it comes to those, pursuits and those disciplines that we're good at. So to ask us our opinion of any president past perhaps Obama is fruitless, or to compare presidential performance. But Gallup does it anyway. Gallup does it because we get off on seeing what we think. Gallup does it because it's a way of selling other polls, and Gallup does it because they're probably slipping next to Rasmussen and a few of the other more popular polls. So I would say this in conclusion. Polls are reflective of opinion. Opinion, like the man said, is like a you-know-what, everybody's got one. It doesn't mean that this is correct. It doesn't mean that this is a good direction. It doesn't even mean that the people that are... This is just opinion. And what we see here now is a pretty uninformed opinion. George Bush, 1 percentage point higher than Obama. Well, that's an opinion based on what? Based on what? Obama ain't even finished being president of the United States. Bush had all 8 years for people to reflect on. Then we go back to John Kennedy, who was assassinated, who was martyred, who was president for 5 years, who has a flame, an eternal flame burning for him at Arlington Cemetery, whose picture every time we see it is of a handsome young president with a Salem cigarette sailing out there off of Hyannis, who had the beautiful wife and the little saluting son, that Kennedy. 85%, I'm surprised it wasn't 100%. And then we have Jimmy Carter, 26 years after the fact, trips to the Middle East, Habitat for Humanity, a man who made his name as an ambassador for the United States. Sure, a guy who's liberal, but nonetheless, a man some have described as the best ex-president of the United States we've ever had. I'm surprised it's as low as 61%. Lyndon Johnson, who most people see as a hick and a hayseed and the successor to Kennedy, who would never be Kennedy, and yet he was a damn good president and a good man. 49%. And on and on and on we go. And to that, you're going to have Barack Obama having to stand there and be compared 2 years into office as president of the United States. It's a joke. And I'm going to, you know, I would like to say that I'll never read these polls again, but the fact is I might as well, because the more I tell you guys about the reality of these things, the better off you're going to be. James Hoffman, or Haman, from Politico wrote this crap. And Gerald Ford went from 60 to 61%. Now, what is that based on? What does that mean? Well, the people that voted that way couldn't even tell you. Gerald Ford was a good man, but as a president, the guy had what? He was 74. He was president for two years and 3 or 4 months, something like that. He had a constant battle on his hands with the Congress. He vetoed I don't know how many bills. The Mayaguez incident was on his watch where he was able to save those soldiers. There was a few other things, including the 200th anniversary of the founding of our country, the Declaration of Independence. That was kind of cool. But beyond that, anyway.
So you don't want me to give you those stories anymore.
I don't. You can give them to me, man, but I'm going to just keep on ripping them like this, okay? All right, Phil Hendry Show. So we'll come back here with Kim Kardashian and Lauren Conrad and the rest of the big earning reality stars when we return here on a world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I know she's got a great-looking ass, okay?
Yeah. Do you have pictures of it?
No, I don't have pictures of it. I ain't going to talk about that. We're on the air right now, if you don't mind.
Now, that'll put a picture on the website.
I ain't putting any pictures of Kim Kardashian on a website.
You got that one nude shot.
You know something, man? That was the one nude shot, okay?
Well, you put it up.
I did not put up any nude shot of... Why don't you guys shut up? I didn't put up any nude shot of Kim Kardashian. There was a nude shot.
Yeah, but I bet you looked at it.
Everybody looked at it. She was spray-painted silver. I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but...
What happened to that?
Why don't you go ahead and Google it, man? I don't know. Anyway, besides being very lovely, Kim Kardashian is also the highest-paid reality star. What does that mean? It means they're stealing their money is basically what they're doing. I mean, she's beautiful, and the show's really, you know, like, okay, I don't know. But you talk about a great gig, man. There's no lines to read. They give you a scene, basically. If you think it's reality, it's not. What they basically say is, okay, he's going to come in, and you're going to be really upset with him because the day didn't go the way. Oh, okay, is that it? Yeah, that's what they do. If it was a reality show, they would just have the camera, and they would follow them around and see what happens. But they don't. They set the shots up. so that the actors in the reality shows can begin to feel as if they're actually actors, you know. Anyway, it pays to be a Kardashian. The three reality star sisters all made it onto the list of the top 10 earning reality television stars, which also included stars of Jersey Shore and The Hills. Kim Kardashian ranked number one on the list, earned an estimated $6 million last year thanks to her various endorsement deals, nightclub appearances, and sponsored tweets. Wait a minute.
What?
That ain't her making money off of the TV show. That's her making money off of the endorsements, nightclub appearances, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, but she's making it because she's a reality star.
No, she's not. She's making that money because she's gorgeous, and people want to look at her, and oh, yeah, she's on a reality show. Bull crap. Anyway, she also sells her own Kim Kardashian-branded products, recently featured on an episode of The Apprentice, whatever those are. I guess it's, what the hell is it?
Like makeup and stuff.
Yeah, they got makeup, and she got like a butt, butt wear.
But where?
Doug.
She's got fashion is what she's got. The list came from news site The Daily Beast, which calculated the earnings with a group of industry professionals, agents, managers, and drug addicts, as well as using public financial reports and disclosures. At number two with $5 million is The Hill star Lauren Conrad, who exited the show before its last season to focus on her fashion line and young adult books, including L.A. Candy. Bethany Frankel is at number three on the list with $4 million. Frankel starred in three shows this year, including Real Housewives of New York City, Bethany Getting Married, and Skating with the Stars, as well as sales from her best-selling book. The Hill star, Audrina Patridge, Audrina Patridge, who starred on the shows last season, as well as the most recent Dancing with the Stars, is at number four with $3.5 million. Now, here's one who is a legitimate reality TV star, because she's been hanging in for a long time. Kate Gosselin earned big bucks from the TLC shows, as well as her best-selling books, to come up with number five, $3.5 million. That's really kind of chicken feed when you talk about, isn't it? Or maybe not, I don't know. I mean, these are cable shows, man. These are cable shows, dude. You know?
Yeah, so?
Well, how many people who are on, like, a regular Monday through Friday, you know, network sitcom are making this kind of change? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, Kate Gosselin, man, she's been a long time, only $3 million. That ain't that much money.
Well, I don't even know. I don't know what the salaries, you know. It still, that's a lot of bread for cable. Anyway, so Jersey Shore star Mike the Situation Sorrentino, a real moron, stepped out of the Jersey Shore to endorse diet pills and a new exercise video, among other endorsement deals, which also includes clothing to land at number six, $3 million a year. Khloe Kardashian and Kourtney Kardashian came in at number seven and number eight thanks to their own reality show, endorsement deals, and shared profits from their licensed perfumes and clothing store. They made $2.5 million each. Pauly D. Del Vecchio of Jersey Shore earned plenty for his high-paid DJ appearances, and even at Baskin-Robbins had an endorsement to come in at number nine, $2 million, while Kendra star Kendra earned enough to come in at number 10, $2 million. So?
I don't know, man. I haven't even heard of half of these people.
Kendra, man. Star of Kendra? What the hell? What kind of a reality show is that, man? I ain't seen that.
No, it's like, who, Kendra?
Yeah, Kendra. I mean, she's the star of Kendra. So, look at this. Jason writes down perfume. Like, I don't know how to pronounce that.
Man, that guy, he's in trouble, man.
Kendra was on The Girls Next Door, Playboy Playmate. Now she's in Kendra. Okay, so is she spun it off, or she's spinning out, or she's spun out, man, huh?
She's like Hugh Hefner.
Hugh Hefner?
Yeah, who's Hugh Hefner?
You mean Hugh Hefner?
My understanding was Hefner.
Who's Hugh Hefner?
Well, anyway, she's Hugh Hefner's girlfriend.
Hugh Hefner, man. His girlfriend, right? Yeah. Well, way to do it, baby. And I excuse me for calling you baby, but I'm sure Hugh wouldn't mind, Mr. Hefner. So the top 10 highest paid reality stars, Kim Kardashian, $6 million, Lauren Conrad, $5 million, Bethany Frankel, $4 million, Audrina Patridge, $3.5 million, Kate Gosselin, $3.5 million, Mike the Situation Sorrentino, $3 million. Are you ready for that? Some freaking meathead like that? And Paul Del Vecchio, $2 million. These jackasses, they were probably running their heads through brick walls for beers and shots. They were probably doing things like running their heads through bathroom doors so somebody would buy them a drink. you know?
Yeah.
Now they got $2 million. Kourtney Kardashian, Khloe Kardashian, Clinky Kardashian, Claudehead Kardashian, and Claude Kardashian. And there you have it, man. That's the top 10. All right, TV ratings. The sing-off starts well, but CBS wins Monday night. How I Met Your Mother, 9.5 million viewers. Rules of Engagement, 8 million. CBS kicks ass in the 8 o'clock hour. NBC comes in second at 8.5 million. Fox, the special American Country Awards. I watch those, but that just goes to show you, I don't have my finger on the pulse of anything. I may have my finger on something, but it ain't anybody's pulse. ABC, Skating with the Stars, 5 million. And the CW 90210, 2.5 million. 9 p.m., 2.5 Men, 13 million. Mike and Molly, 11 million. The Sing-Off, number two again. American Country Awards, number three again. ABC Skating with the Stars, number four again. Maybe you guys will give up on that Skating with the Stars. What do you think, huh? And the CW wiping up the rear with Gossip Girl. And finally, the 10 o'clock hour. CBS, Hawaii 5-0. Castle on ABC, 8.6 million. NBC Chase, 5.1 million. CBS cleans up again. With 2.5 Men, How I Met Your Mums, Mike and Molly. Mike and Molly? I thought that show was stinking it up. Well, I guess in any event, Mike and Molly, 2.5 Men, Rules of Engagement, Hawaii 5-0, and Skating with the Stars, No One Cares. How about that? I'm happy to see that. I really am. You know, when I was a kid, there was a show on called International Showtime. It was once a week on Saturday night, 7:30. It was a circus. From different parts of the world. They would go to, they were in Prague, and then they were in New York. And I used to like it, but I used to think, boy, I bet you there's a lot of adults that just find this so irritating, they want to put a brick through the TV set, right? And I was right. My dad came in one night and put a brick through the TV set. So I'm probably the same way with that whole skating thing. Our producer is Jason Rance, technical director Charles Wygan, and our associate producer Dan Northcraft, The Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com.
Phil Hendry.